This is a dominant presentation.
We come here once more to do some meditation, to do some practice together. And usually the idea of practicing something means doing things. And when we practice meditation, we practice not doing things. So there's already so many things which you're not doing by coming here. Right? So you're not going down to the pub. You're not going to the races. You're not watching telly. Maybe listening to telly a bit. Not sleeping, not reading a book, all of those things that you've given up. So in Buddhism we talk about renunciation, letting go. Right? And sometimes we think about letting go as if it's something something like special, like it's a special spiritual quality, or maybe it's only monks and nuns who have to do renunciation. But actually, renunciation is a very basic fact of life. Every time that you make a choice, right, you're renouncing every other possible future. Right? Every time you make a choice, you go to the supermarket and you think, I'm going to buy Weet-Bix instead of cornflakes. You don't know what would have happened if you'd bought cornflakes. Maybe the future would be completely different. Right? But that cornflakes future is now gone forever, and you'll never know what it was in. Right? You never know what would have happened if you'd bought cornflakes instead of Weet-Bix. And you can try buying cornflakes again the next day, but it's still just it's another future. And you can buy cornflakes every day for the rest of your life, and you'll still never know what it was like on that day to make that choice. So this is what we mean when we talk about giving up. All of those things, all of those possible futures are gone forever. And when we do our spiritual practice, we're making that choice to let go of so many other things that we might have done. So many much more fun things that we might have done. Much more entertaining things. But for some reason we've made this choice, we've made the choice to come here. And even by doing just this much, already there's that degree of peacefulness that we have because of that. It's more peaceful to be sitting here with our friends, our Dhamma friends. Come here to meditate. It's more peaceful than most other things that you might be doing with your day. And we haven't come here to get anything. Nobody's come here to make money or to impress anybody. Is that right? I hope so. No one's come here because you want to impress someone? Is that right? Sometimes it might happen, I guess. So we've all come here just with a pure motive. We just want to practice Dhamma, that's all. Hi, come in. Welcome. There's plenty of space up the front here. You sure? You might not be able to hear. So you think about all of those things that we've let go of. Right? So this is, actually, this is the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path. Right? We talk about the Noble Eightfold Path. People ask me, how do you do the Noble Eightfold Path? What is the Noble Eightfold Path? They ask me these things all the time. But the thing is, we're actually already practicing that. Right? This is part of the Noble Eightfold Path, is Nekkhama Sankhapa, is having that, the aspiration or that intention for letting go. And often we think of these things as being something small. We don't realize how the significance of it. And maybe you come along for a meditation afternoon like this, and then you're sitting and your experience is the experience of being distracted, being hot, being, you know, thinking about things. And then because you had those experiences, you think, oh, my practice is terrible. I can't meditate. Right? Sometimes how we think. And we forget that actually what we've done, even in just showing up, is to establish a powerful direction in your mind. Right? This is basically the choice that we have in our lives. The choice, do we get more things or do we let go of things? Or to put another way, do we meditate or do we go shopping? These are the two things. Right? Some people are very clear about what choice they make. I saw a bumper sticker once and on a Porsche it said, who dies with most toys wins. So there's somebody who is clear about their aims in life, has a sense of purpose. But for most of us, we tend to not so clear about it. We get lost. We get confused. We have a bit of one thing and a bit of the other. We try a bit of holding on and then a bit of letting go. And it's like, oh, now I've let go of something. I can hold on a little bit more. And so we're torn. We're often very kind of ambiguous about what direction do we want to go in. But at any one moment, any one choice we have to go one way or the other. We're either letting go or we're holding on. So nobody can just let go of everything all at once, but what we have to do is we look at what are those things that are actually causing us suffering. And this is one of the things that we learn through our meditation. We come, we sit down, and we read all of the brochures telling us, oh, come and meditate, and it'll be so peaceful. It'll be so happy. And you've seen all of the pictures. It's wonderful. If you go to like Google Images and you just search for meditation, it's so inspiring. All of these hilltops and beaches. if you take Google as your guide, then all meditators are slim, young, beautiful, blonde, and they sit on beaches and hilltops and meditate while the sun's going down. So that's the marketing, right? But the reality of meditation is a little bit different, right? You sit and meditate and you realize, oh, I've meditated for, you know, half an hour and I haven't become slim and blonde and beautiful. What's wrong with me? Where is the magical mountaintop that I'm supposed to be meditating on? Why is it that my mind is still wandering all over the place? Why is it that even though I don't want to think those thoughts, I keep thinking them? Why is it that everything hurts so much? Why is it that, you know, I never used to get angry with people. This is what quite a lot of meditators find, is that they never get angry with people, and then they meditate for a while, and then they start getting really annoyed with people. Especially maybe other meditators who are sitting in the same room, shuffling around or snoring or something like that. And you get very annoyed with them. You're thinking, what's going on? It's very strange, isn't it? Yeah? Remember, I first heard about that from this one monk who I was with as a young monk in the monastery in Thailand. And he was just kind of shaking his head. He just like didn't understand it. Why is it? You know, I never used to get angry. You know, he's a really kind of easygoing guy, you know. Then he comes to the monastery, and then after being there for a few months and meditating, he finds he's getting really annoyed with people. What's up with that? Yeah. So this is the spiritual journey that we're on. It's not predictable, you know. It's not safe. It's not all mountaintops and beach sides. And sometimes what happens is that when you meditate, you start to open yourself up. You start to relax all of those things, right? All of those things which in your life you've built up, like the habits, the coping mechanisms, right? The ways of dismissing things, the ways of not listening, the ways of just getting on with things, right? And you start to relax, your mind opens up. And all of those parts of you, right? Parts of your mind, parts of your thinking, that you've never been happy with, or never been interested in, or never cared about, or never even been aware of, right? All of those things start to creep in, right? You start to become aware of them. So it's not necessarily that you're sort of becoming angry and you never were angry before, but it may be that you had some kind of coping mechanism that would shut yourself off from your anger, yeah? That would desensitize yourself, right? That would refuse to listen, sometimes out of fear, right? So out of fear we close ourselves off, yeah? And then gradually as the fear goes down, the defense mechanisms start to be relaxed, you start to open yourself up more, and then all of these things come in. So that's part of that process of becoming more aware. So always remember that the Buddha has said that the first noble truth, the truth of suffering, is parinyaya, to be fully known. Parinyaya is one of a very lovely word. I really like that word in Pali. Parinyaya. It has something about the meaning of like to know something all the way through. All the way through and all the way around. So when suffering comes to us in meditation, there's no need to try to escape it. It's okay. Sitting there for a while and you feel a bit uncomfortable, that's alright. Maybe you feel some anxiety coming up, restlessness. It's okay. Don't try to cope with it. People always ask, oh, how do I deal with this in my meditation? You don't deal with it. That's why you're meditating. It's when you're not meditating that you have to learn to cope with these things, right? It's when you're at work and you're feeling sad and people come up to you and you have to smile at them and be nice to them, right? That's when you have to cope with things. That's when you have to deal with them, right? When you're stuck in the traffic and you're feeling really, you have to hurry somewhere and you're feeling really frustrated and angry, that's when you have to cope with it, right? But in meditation, you don't have to cope with anything. You don't have to deal with anything. Just feel whatever you feel. It's okay. Don't worry about it. If you feel sad, just have a cry. Have you ever cried in your meditation yet? If you haven't cried in your meditation, just let me know. I'll be able to help you out with a few things. Have you ever giggled like a little child in your meditation? Have you ever felt so much pain that you just couldn't believe it? And then that pain just goes away. Have you ever felt these, like when you're meditating, that when you go into a place where you feel things, and you're like, that feeling doesn't have a name. You're like, I've been alive for this all this time, and I've never learned a name for that feeling. I don't know what it is. So this is the power of wisdom, as wisdom is growing. All of these things which you've been shutting out, all the things you've been just ignoring, trying to pretend that they don't exist. Gradually, 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 you're letting them in. You're opening your mind, right? That's what it means to open your mind, to become more conscious, right? Becoming more conscious is not, it's not a simple or an unproblematic thing. See, a lot of the time we spend our life in retreat from consciousness. Okay, this is why we have this ambiguity towards it, right? I mean, you think about student life, for example, right? When you're at university, right? You spend your daytimes expanding your consciousness by learning and your nighttimes shrinking it by drinking. Right? Except on the days when they have a special at the university tavern, in which case it's the afternoons are shrunk as well, not just the evenings. But that's true, isn't it? Yeah, and we're on this kind of thing. We're expanding our mind. That's why do people drink? Why do people take drugs? Right. This is why all of these programs to try to stop people taking drugs and so on are always a complete failure, because they never address the cause of the issue. Right. And so the cause of the issue, actually, drugs, is all about consciousness. Right. We're not happy with our consciousness the way that it is, so we try to shut ourselves off from it. Yeah? Try to make it more bearable. Yeah? The pain of being alive, you try to make that more bearable by drowning your sorrows, as they say. But of course it never works. Yeah? It's not a skillful coping technique. So when you're meditating, you're letting your mind grow, letting your awareness expand, letting your consciousness become more clear, so that you're not drowning your sorrows anymore. You're not hiding from your sorrows, but you're allowing yourself to feel all those things. And it sounds very banal, because it probably is, but at the end of the day, they're just feelings. And there's nothing to be afraid of. You've been feeling things your whole life. Maybe you don't notice it. Maybe you don't realize that you're feeling things. And this is something I joke about when I'm in Singapore. They had the survey last year that showed that the Singaporeans were the people who had the least emotions in the whole world. So when I go to Singapore, I say, is this true? To the Singaporeans, because it was like 50% of people in Singapore said they'd experienced like no emotions whatsoever in the previous 24 hours. Something like this. And I'm like, really? They say, yeah, we don't have time to have any feelings. Work and shopping and doing this and doing that. Who has time to feel anything, right? So then they come along to meditation, and you know, you have to learn to feel again. So this is one thing actually says in the suttas, is that it's not possible to find success in meditation unless you learn to accept, right? The word in Pali is kanti, unless you learn to accept feelings, right? Sometimes it's physical feelings in your meditation, right? Maybe you're feeling like a day like today, it's a bit hot and muggy. Maybe it's feeling, you know, physically uncomfortable and you're sitting and you're wanting to kind of shift. Sometimes feelings like, you know, itches in your skin, or maybe insects biting you or something like that. So you have to learn to accept all of those things. And so you don't get, in Australia, you don't get so much of that. I mean, there's still a bit, but not so much. In Thailand, in the forest tradition, the meditation monks, they always talk about like tigers and elephants and bears and things like that. But actually, the most terrifying animals in meditation is the ants in Thailand. Yeah, they're terrible. Like mosquitoes, you can sort of, you know, you can use a mosquito net and something. It's not too hard to keep them at bay. But the ants, yeah, it's really hard to keep them out. I don't know, Thailand seems to be the worst place I've ever been for ants. All these different kinds. They have what they call Mot Lin, which means like the fire tongue ants. And they're like about this big, and when they see you down the path about 50 meters away, and they leap screaming in these suicide squads to rend the flesh from your bones. But then, you know, when you're meditating, you've got ants crawling all over your body, right? It's one of the basic experiences of meditating in Thailand. And you're sitting there, and so sometimes you don't know, is that an ant or is that just an itch or something, right? And then you're like, okay, just be mindful. And they always just seem to just go straight for your ear. Have you noticed that? You have this uncanny ability, you know, and you're like, okay, I've got an ant on my hand, that doesn't matter. I've got an ant on my arm, that doesn't matter. I've got an ant on my shoulder, that doesn't matter. I've got an ant on my neck, it doesn't matter too much. I've got an ant heading towards my ear again. At what point do you intervene in the process and decide, no, I'd rather not have an ant crawling around inside my ear? Yes. It did actually happen to me once when I was in Malaysia. I had a big red biting ant crawled inside my ear. Yeah, started chewing my brains from the inside. Yeah, that was disturbing. It was a good test for mindfulness, though. Yeah, I failed. What can I say? So just to learn that process of acceptance, right? To be patient with everything that happens. And even just that is already a very, very powerful quality to learn. Right? Imagine how much happier your life can be, right? If you can just, next time you have to call Telstra, for example. You know, this is a very advanced practice. Yeah? You know what I mean, don't you? Yes. And you're sitting there and you're thinking, you're a telephone company. Can't you answer the phone? So if you can develop that sense of practice, of patience, actually it's such a powerful practice. And then you just sit there in your meditation. And all of those things can be happening all around you, you know, and all of the kind of the excuses. And, you know, I remember one time, one of the fellows I used to know when I was in Malaysia, who this is seated up here. And he told me his story once that he wanted to learn how to meditate, and he'd gone here and there to try to learn to meditate and couldn't find anybody to teach him. And I guess this was the days before the internet and things like that, so he didn't have anywhere to learn. And he went to this Chinese temple in Ipoh, and saw the monk there and asked him to meditate. And the monk said, "Oh, you don't have to meditate. It's just Namo Amitabha, and that's good. That's all. You don't have to do that meditation. Oh, don't. Well, meditation will drive you crazy." That's what they say. And so he didn't really believe this. And so he was in this temple and he sat down. He just thought, "Okay, I'll just do it anyway. I don't know what I'm doing. I never learned to meditate." And he just sat there, and he said, you know, he was just sitting, it was just like a bare concrete floor in this temple. He said they were doing building work on the temple at the time, so there's all this machinery going on, there's noise. And he said it was like really hot and uncomfortable, and there was lots of mosquitoes around. He's been eaten by mosquitoes, and he didn't know anything about how to meditate. And you could see when I was talking to him about this experience that there's something about him which kind of, even after this was many years later when I saw him, and you can see there's something about him which just lit up when he's talking about that experience. Yeah? He said, I went inside. He said, all of this, nothing. It's all gone. I went inside. I don't know how, but I did. I went inside. And he had this very, very profound experience in his meditation. He said, since then, no, cannot. Huh? But somehow, yeah, this is a thing they call like the beginner's mind. Right? He didn't know what he was doing, but he did it anyway. Right? All he did was let go. Right? And that's what actually makes your meditation work. It's not having the best, you know, perfect meditation cushion or the most quiet place to meditate or knowing the best meditation methods, you know. I know some monks who shall remain nameless who, you know, one monk in particular was he travelled around Thailand and basically interrogated every single meditation teacher that he could to try and extract their meditation methods from them. And he started with Ajahn Chah, and he went around everywhere. I have a lot of gratitude for this monk because he was the monk who introduced me to my meditation teacher, to Ajahn Chachai, right, who I learned. And he went around all of these monks, and then he ran out of monks in Thailand and he went to Sri Lanka. And he went around and got all the meditation monks and then got all of their things and then ran out of Sri Lankans and he went to Burma. And then, Burma, he went to Palk and all of these different places. And he knows more about meditation. I think he knows more about meditation methods than any person alive. And, you know, he's talked, you know, to so many people and, you know, he's one of these people he was completely fearless in terms of asking questions about people, you know, to different ajahns and teachers and things. And, you know, got this is some very, very interesting interviews and things that were recorded of the questions that he'd asked because he was always just relentless in getting all the information out. It was actually very interesting to read. At the end of the day, he disrobed. And I don't know what he's doing these days. Yeah. So he's a very good person, you know, he was a good monk and things. But it's just that restlessness about what it is that you're doing. Why are you chasing so much? Huh? What do you want? Why do you need to find the best method? You know, the best teacher, the best guru. What are you trying to get out of it? Actually, none of those things make all that much difference. The only thing that makes a difference is letting go. And if you can let go, you can meditate. It's as simple as that. So people often ask me these things, like, you know, where can I get a good introduction book on meditation or something like that? I haven't read a book on meditation for 20 years. Why do you have to read books on about meditation? You just do it. It's easy. You sit there and you let go. So I should do some meditation instructions for this afternoon. Was that a good idea? Should I do some meditation instructions? Does anyone here not know how to meditate? Oh, we have a few people who don't know how to meditate. Excellent. That's good. That means you don't have to unlearn things. Or you don't have to unlearn quite so much. Okay, so we'll do some introduction to meditation. And maybe we could do some breath meditation for this afternoon. Is that a good idea? Yeah? Especially to get people going. So I'll just talk about meditation just for a few minutes, and then we'll do some guided meditation together. Okay? So remember all those things I've been talking about so far. I've been talking about letting go, basically, and renunciation. And that's the heart of any meditation. So what we do when we meditate, you think about meditating is like, almost like, one way of thinking about it is like climbing a ladder. So that when you climb up a ladder, you have to let go of the rung below, but you have to still hold on to the rung above you. Right? So you don't let go of everything completely, but we let go of most things, okay? So here's a short list of the things that you have to let go of to begin to meditate, okay? Short list. 1 is your home. 2 is your family. 3 is your job. 4 is all your friends. 5 is your name, your identity, your memories, your personality, everybody that you've ever met, everything that you've ever done, everything that you want to do or expect to do in the future. Okay? Now that's just the start, okay? That's the beginner's step, okay, for meditation, right? We let go of all of those things. What is left, right? Well, what is left is just being here in the present, right? And that all sounds ridiculous, right? When I mention you have to let go of all those things, it sounds kind of crazy, but the reality is that if you are mindful of breathing in one breath, yeah, at that moment, when you're mindful of that, you're not thinking of all of those other things. Right? Those things have already been let go of in that moment. And so that's putting down of that incredible burden. All of those things you have to sort of maintain, that face that we have to keep up. Right? All of that has been put down. You just be mindful. It's just breathing in and breathing out. There's nothing, you know, special about it. You're just a human being. Every human being breathes. Even dogs can do it. Right? So you just breathe. And when you just breathe, that's all there is. So everything else has been let go of. And only the breathing is left. Okay? So don't think about the breathing as being something which is small and subtle and which you have to sort of focus your attention on or make yourself pay attention to. Think of your breathing as being like an ocean. Think of your breathing as being like you're lying down, just relaxing in the ocean, and the waves are just rocking you backwards and forwards. Okay? Your breath is everywhere, right? Your whole body is pervaded by your breath. When you're still and you're sitting in meditation, you can feel it. You can feel that rhythm of your whole body gently moving and swaying to that expansion and contraction of your breath. Right? It's not a kind of mystical teaching or anything like that. It's just a physical reality. You can feel your whole body moving with that rhythm of the breath. So when you're meditating, rather than sort of trying to objectify the breath and pay attention to the breath, instead, you just relax and you let the breath come to you. Okay? So you can almost like you step, rather than trying to have to step forward and focus on your breath, it's almost like you step back, right? Step back a little bit from your breath and allow the breath to come to you. Yeah? And let the breath come to you. Let the breath do the hard work. Okay? You just relax and let the breath take over. And you just keep your awareness with that, gently, gently, gently. When you first begin to meditate, when we first sit down, it tends to be the case that the breath is somewhat heavy, somewhat long because we still have energies in the body and the mind. The brain is still working. The brain's still demanding oxygen. And so the breath tends to be a bit heavier and a bit coarser. And as we sit there for a while, even for maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes, then you'll notice that your breath gradually becomes a little bit softer. Right? It's calming down. This is the first stage in breath meditation, is to notice this, that shift in that breath. So what's happening is that your body, your energies in your body are quietening down, right? Pasambhayam kaya sankharam. It's a tranquilizing of your physical activities and bodily activities. The energies in your body soothing and quieting down, and you just don't need so much oxygen to fuel all of that. In the yoga tradition, they say that a person's life is not measured by the number of years that you live, but by the amount of breaths that you take. Yeah? So that if you... And there's actually something to that, isn't there? Because the breath is like the oxygen, and it's oxidizing. It's like it's rusting your body in, right? Yeah? It's that energy churning through all of your cells. So the more that you calm yourself down, your cells, everything gets a chance to rejuvenate. Everything gets a chance to rest and refresh itself. So this is the beginnings of the breath meditation, is that feeling of being able to sit, to relax, and just to allow the breath to take over and to allow that breath to calm us down. Now, when that happens, and when that process, as the process deepens, then we'll notice that it gradually becomes accompanied by a feeling. Like maybe when we begin to meditate, we don't really feel much with the breath. It's kind of a neutral feeling, right? It's just air coming in and out. It doesn't really feel like anything. Okay? And so this is one of the remarkable things about meditation. Like most of the things you have in the world, you know, if you have something which is pleasant, you know, you have like an ice cream and it's pleasant and the first few mouthfuls is nice, but then you have a bit more and it's less nice, and then after a little while then it starts to make you sick. So the more you have it, the less pleasure you get from it. Whereas with the breath in your meditation is the opposite. Right? When you begin, there's nothing much to it. It's just kind of neutral. But then as you become more peaceful, you feel the soothing power of that breath. And then it starts to become very pleasant. And there's this deep, soothing pleasure that comes with the breath. Right? But that sense of pleasure that comes with the breath won't come if you're forcing it. Right? Won't come if you're straining with the breath. It only comes when you're just very relaxing. And that is what leads your mind to peace. Okay? Always remember this. Always the most important thing. The Buddha said in talking about meditation, right? Said that the practice of mindfulness leads to pleasure in the mind, leads to joy, and the joy leads to pleasure. The pleasure leads to tranquility, yeah? And the pleasure and the tranquility lead to your mind becoming peaceful. They lead to samadhi. That's how the mind goes to samadhi, not by controlling the breath, right? Not by making yourself do something. Not by fixing your attention. Okay? It's not about any of those things. It's about that emotion of calm and joy, tranquilizing your energies, being patient. That's what will lead to your mind coming together in samadhi. So don't think that, you know, when I'm talking about this way, when I'm saying, but talking about that sense of pleasure and the relaxing of your body, don't think that that's a kind of it's not a kind of watered down teaching, right? Sometimes people think that everything has to be really hard and rigid and controlling, and that's the real kind of thing. No, that's not what the Buddha was talking about, and that's not how your mind works. Your mind works by being drawn towards what's pleasurable. And if you can provide the mind with something that's peaceful and pleasurable through your meditation, your mind will be drawn to that, it will be settled down, it will become content with that.